I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about Britain's Labour government from 1945 to 51. If you are interested, I just finished writing a textbook for the EdExcel syllabus on Britain 1918 to 1979, and that should be in all good bookshops by June. Just saying. Just dropping that in there. But anyway, the reason why I want to talk about this is because it's fraught with problems and mythologizations and I think all sorts of misconceptions and that kind of thing. And it's an interesting question to ask why it is that this reforming ministry that was established in 1945, 6 years later, is cast into the electoral wilderness for 13 years. If you think about the liberal reforming governments from 1906 onwards, they have, you know, generally a far more successful run of things. They have at least one ministry or more. Anyway, so let's start with the 1945 general election. It was called following VE Day, but before VJ Day. So Winston Churchill had rather hoped that he could hold the coalition together until at least the victory over Japan, and then perhaps even further, quite what Churchill thought was going to happen. Following the victory over Japan, I don't know, but he certainly had given some talk to his senior staff of making war against Russia from 1945 onwards and hopefully dragging America into it. So perhaps that was part of his thinking. It's not really very clear. So the decision by Labour to call a general election had been always part of the general agreement within the national government, the wartime national government, since 1940, when it was indeed Labour's decision to back Churchill against Lord Halifax and to withdraw any support from Neville Chamberlain, that enabled Churchill to be Prime Minister in the first place. The campaign that Churchill fights, as is popularly known, is quite a negative one. Churchill, during the election, refers to the Labour Party as having need of a Gestapo. They said that the growth of the state that Labour had planned into areas of the economy previously untouched by the power of the state, except, of course, during the war, Churchill said, would need some vast bureaucratic sort of secret police force in order to enforce it, which was rather crass, rather crude, and treated with ridicule at the time. But that alone doesn't account for Churchill's defeat in 1945. He believed that a grateful nation would back him and would support him in peacetime, and there are various theories as to why that doesn't happen. Theory one is that there was a social revolution happened during the war. This is put forward by Arthur Marwick, who believed that the experience of war had profound sociological, lasting sociological effects on Britain, and it made us more egalitarian, more classless, less inclined to really listen to a Tory aristocrat. The evidence, however, that social change, social attitudes changed particularly during the war is pretty thin. The organisation Mass Observation, when interviewing people during the war, found that basically class prejudices and reactionary attitudes generally sort of prevailed. There was a wider sense that that people in Britain must temporarily during the war kind of muck in together and sacrifice together and share some kind of experience of sacrifice, even if it's just through rationing, to get by. But the idea that we become this more even, less hierarchical society is pretty illusory. The experience of the 1930s is the next theory, that British people looked to the 1930s and looked to long period of economic depression between 1929 and about 1934. But again, that doesn't make much sense, because firstly, during the worst periods of the Depression, there was a Labour Prime Minister, Ramsay MacDonald, presiding over a national government, admittedly, which was predominantly made up of Conservatives, but a Labour Prime Minister nonetheless. Secondly, during the period of recovery from 1935 to 1939, there are two Conservative Prime Ministers. So the idea that the Conservatives were synonymous with economic downturn is challengeable. It's not to suggest that, irrespective of the facts, public opinion criticised the Conservatives, because in no doubt it probably did. However, memories of the 1930s perhaps can't give us everything we need in order to explain Labour's victory in 1945, particularly since at least part of the decade there was a return to prosperity, and the areas that were most deeply afflicted throughout the 1930s, places like the North East, the Clyde in Scotland, South Wales, these were Labour supporting areas anyway that would always have returned Labour MPs, irrespective of good times or bad. So a third explanation is one I prefer, is that the two world wars, not just the first and the second, but the first as well, had demonstrated to British people that the state had a very important role to play in economic management and in the development of society. So ideas that were statist were very popular in 1945. Now, if we go back to the argument about the experience of the Great Depression, the notion that a free market should have a hand in deciding prices, wages, levels of employment, and the distribution of goods by 1945 is quite a discredited one. Not only has the free market appeared to have failed during the 1930s, but state management of the economy appears to have triumphed during the first half of the 1940s. By the government setting targets and quotas for aircraft production, dominating the food supply by rationing, and intervening in all aspects of economic life. The scourge of Nazism was successfully defeated. Now, this is obviously an oversimplification, and it had obviously a great deal to do with American loans and lend-lease programmes and that kind of thing. But it's about the perception. So statism and state intervention become are far more popular ideas in 1945 than really the vagaries of the free market, which are associated with the Conservative Party. And the Conservatives themselves were not averse to state intervention. There's this idea that perpetuates that the Labour Party's manifesto, Let Us Face the Future, and the Conservatives were, you know, a red and blue document. This isn't really true. If you look, and you can Google it, it's online, the Conservative Party manifesto in 1945 contains a great deal about house building, about some kind of version of a national health insurance scheme or national health service, the intervention within the market to alleviate joblessness, and all sorts of stuff that the kind of the true blue Tory of the Thatcher years would have found deeply shocking. And this is under Winston Churchill. So an overall political consensus in 1945 was the state does have a significant role. It just so happens that the Labour Party seemed to be able to capture this sentiment far more successfully. The idea, while we're on the subject, of the state and its role isn't necessarily a Labour one either. It wasn't a Labour Party member, or indeed a Conservative Party member, that developed the foundations of the welfare state. It was Sir William Beveridge in 1942 with the Beveridge Report, who was a Liberal. So the ideas of state intervention and the use of state power in order to create a standard of living, a high standard of living, for Britain's working classes after the war, originally has a kind of a liberal origin, and that perhaps is why it's relatively more acceptable to the Conservatives than if it had been associated with some kind of dastardly Marxist plot. 1945 sees a fundamental problem emerge for the Labour Party, and it's one that would eventually break the Labour Party by 1951. And this is something that I think...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Is a recurring feature for Labour. You can see it under Ramsay MacDonald, under Clement Attlee, and later under Harold Wilson, is that the ambitions and goals that the party has are very much subject to the vagaries of of free markets and of really what's in the Treasury. And in 1945, obviously, Britain has been severely financially tested by the war, but is virtually bankrupted by the decision of the Americans to end the Lend-Lease programme. John Maynard Keynes visits Washington in order to negotiate what he was hoping for would be a gift, a one-off gift to the British Exchequer in order for Britain's efforts alone between 1939 and 1941 during the war. And instead, the Americans don't give a gift at all. They give a loan. It's a loan that is smaller than that which Keynes had hoped for, and a loan that is based on certain exacting criteria. One of them is that by 1947, currency controls will be removed. That means that there will be no more controls on how many pounds you can either A, take out of the country, or B, exchange for another currency. This means by 1947, there is a run on the pound. There is precious little reason for American investors to continue investing in the British economy, along with other international investors, and they exchange their pounds for dollars. And it really is the end of the pound being the world's reserve currency and the rise of the dollar. And both the First and the Second World Wars, America really triumphs at Britain's expense, using these sorts of financial devices, and supplants the bankrupt British Empire with American sort of imperium of the 20th and now 21st centuries. So the problem that Britain has is that, and particularly that the Labour government has, is that they have high spending commitments and now an economy that won't really perform. And they have and much of this was based on the hope that either A, America would lend or give Britain money, or that B, they would lend on such terms that would be favourable to the British economy, i.e. enable the British to keep currency controls. Neither of these things happen. One possible reason is that the Republican and right aspects of the Democrats looked upon the plans for the welfare state in Britain, saw it as Britain going communist, and thought, well, we're damned if we're paying for that. The problem here is that emerges is kind of intensified by the Korean War of 1950. This is a pivotal moment for the Labour Party. The Labour Party had two factions, a Bevanite left and a Gaitskellite right. But the Bevanite left under Nye Bevan, the founder of the NHS and Minister for Health, was determined to protect state spending. Nye Bevan was a extremely hardworking, extremely passionate advocate of free health and a free health service. Immensely disliked within the party for his kind of brash and abrasive attitudes, and loathed by the Conservatives, not least because he described them as lower than cockroaches. His experience of growing up in South Wales during the turn of the century, perhaps, didn't really dispose him to the gentry particularly. The Gaitskellite right were the behind Hugh Gaitskell, the Labour Chancellor and later Labour leader, were the kind of the emergent sort of centre of the party. And you can see this centrist tradition later on in the likes of Harold Wilson and James Callaghan. You might even suggest that Tony Crossland, Tony Crossland certainly is a centrist contemporary of Hugh Gaitskell. You might even suggest that people such as Tony Blair come to represent it later on. That's a whole other discussion, I know. In 1950, the budget announced by Hugh Gaitskell contained cuts to the NHS, including prescription charges for glasses. And the reason for this is the cost of the Korean War, which had just begun that year. The Korean War had precipitated this huge arms boom, and there had been a rapid need for Britain to expand her military forces and to expand her overseas commitments. The belief, obviously, was that this is perhaps the beginning stages of a Third World War, and Britain, particularly in nuclear terms, had to be ready for it. The Labour Party virtually divides over this issue, with the left and Bevan and the right and the Gateschall taking odds with one another. Gateschall insisting that certain cuts have to be made in order to pay for defence, in order to pay for Britain's commitments within the Cold War, and Bevan insisting that this is a complete abrogation of everything that the Labour Party stood for, and a surrender really to what he called Toryism. He assumed really that Gateschall was something of a Tory in disguise. And it's these kinds of splits that lead to the defeat of Labour the following year in 1951. But the other issue that really leads to that defeat is the inability of Labour to end rationing. Rationing is only ended in 1954 on all goods. And the need to retain rationing, long after nearly every other belligerent country has abandoned it, is partly due to the miscalculations that Labour makes in 1945, assuming that Lend-Lease would continue. It's partly due to the fact that the loan issue didn't work out quite as hoped, and the fact that much of the money that was borrowed from America is not invested in kind of capital infrastructure projects that will enhance the productivity of the economy. Much of it is frittered away on day-to-day expenses, and a lot of it is spent on keeping Germany fed. The British-occupied zone of Germany is extremely expensive. The result, however, is that Labour are seen as firstly questionable when it comes to the economy, and secondly, this enthusiasm for statism, this enthusiasm for the power of state intervention to build hospitals and flats and to redevelop the economy, becomes increasingly strained as the material goods that other countries appear to be beginning to enjoy don't make it to Britain. During the cold winter of 1947, the British people had to accept food parcels sent from relatives in places like South Africa and Canada. The standards of living for British people were actually worse in the immediate post-war years, 1946-47, than they were during the war. That said, the Labour government by 1950 had restored economic productivity, unemployment was virtually negligible, and they had developed a National Health Service, they had implemented the 1944 Education Act, and they had begun to develop new housing projects for people bombed out during the war. The Labour Party had, this is of kind of slightly more questionable economic merit, had carried out a range of nationalisations, partly due to ideology, i.e. that the commanding heights of the economy should be in state hands, and therefore and under what would be described by the left of the Labour Party as democratic control, though how democratic that is arguable. But also, it was a way of preventing a recurrence of the 1930s. The state industry that can be subsidised can never really be undercut by a private concern. So a state-owned car company, for example, will never go out of business because of competition from a foreign private concern. And this is probably the case, but also it stores up fundamental economic problems for later on. And the relationship, which we'll kind of hopefully explore later on in another podcast, between nationalisation, state subsidies, productivity and inflation is a very complex one, one which really requires more examination than we've probably got time for right here. Okay, so I hope that was useful, and as I said, just mentioning, there is a textbook for AQA EdXL, I beg your pardon, and the second one that I'm just finishing off for AQA coming out later this year, so keep your eyes out for them. And there are two new Explaining History titles hitting the shelves in the next week or two. One is Explaining International Relations, 1870 to 1914, A Student's Guide. And the other is Explaining Britain and Her Empire, 1851 to 1914. So if you're studying at the moment and you need a bit of inspiration, check those out and they'll be with you soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.